It's 8 o'clock. Appreciate you joining us on this Tuesday. Jim Davis along with the Buckeye Boy, the Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network, 101.1 FM, 1340 AM here in the Valley, along Highway 50. It's 102.1 FM and online all the time at theteam1340.com. Got the mobile app and all that good stuff. Interviews from the show, the full 3 hours, can also be found at theteam1340.com as well. We have pole dancing coming up, our top five teams in Major League Baseball, our top five favorite fictional baseball players. So we'll have that, and you can chime in on that today as well. Text or call us on the team line, 970-242-1340. So we do have a winner for Wrigley Field, Colorado Sports Trivia this morning.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the winner of the contest.
He's another winner on the Team Sports Network.
Yes, Eric, first in the door, 1992.
So congratulations to Eric. Unfortunately, yeah, the last year, we still have Division I baseball in the state with Air Force,
yep,
Northern Colorado as well, but unfortunately, no Power 5 or Power Conference baseball with Colorado State.
Coming
or,
back?
Ever, or Colorado, I should say, we wouldn't be Colorado State because they're still considered not in a Power 5 conference, but Colorado, which yep. I think they dropped baseball, I want to say early 80s. I have to look back and see on Colorado when they dropped baseball. But it's been a long time since the Buffs had a baseball program when Herb Brown was the coach over at Colorado. Mm-hmm. All right, 8:02. Jim along with the Buckeye Boy today. We'll have Mav Day brought to you by Colorado Craft Coffee and Beer coming up at 9 o'clock this morning. But joining us right now, it's a pleasure to have with us the new head coach of the Colorado Mesa Maverick men's basketball team, Mike Dunlap, joins us. Mike, a pleasure. Thanks for joining us this morning. You know, it's a very hectic day for you.
Yeah, it's good to be on. Thanks for having me, Jim.
It has been years since we have talked when you were at Metro State, when you won a couple of national championships over there. But take us through what this has been like for you, the journey for you to come back to the RMAC after you've spent time in the NBA, head coach of the Charlotte Bobcats. You were there with Giannis and company in 2021 when they won the NBA title, and assistant coach from the Milwaukee Bucks. The success you've had, obviously, in college basketball, but also in professional basketball as well. What brings you to Colorado? What brings you back to the state? What brings you to Colorado Mesa, Mike?
Well, first is the university. It's dynamic. And what Tim Foster and now John Marshall, President Marshall, are doing is dynamic. So I wanted to be a part of that growth. And also the purity of Division II is special, the RMAC, and what that the game of basketball, kind of a Hoosiers environment that I love.
You've known Joan McDermott, the Mavericks AD, for a long time when you were both, of course, over at Metro State. How much did that relationship play a role in you deciding to come to Grand Junction and coach the Mavericks?
Yeah, well, as you know, Jim, you got to have alignment. And from the president's office right on through, people have got to want to be good, sustain themselves. And there's so many programs that the Mavs have. Baseball, it could be wrestling on the female side of it. It could be diving. It could be a multitude of things. The women's basketball program and others are very special. And so Joan at this time is perfect for me as a fit, but also is, you know, you got to have some luck. But, you know, it's hand in glove as far as working for her. So it's good to have an AD that you're comfortable with and you can kind of seamlessly jump into the chair and go.
Mike Dunlap, the new head coach of the Colorado Mesa men's basketball team, joining us today on the Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network. It's been a while since you've been a college coach, Mike. That was Loyola Marymount back 2014 to 2020. And certainly things have changed in the college basketball landscape from Division I all the way down to Division II. The transfer portal has obviously had a big impact on so many programs, and it's had impact on the Mavericks program with after the trip to the Sweet 16 and Mike DeGeorge deciding to leave to go to Cal Poly, that big chunk of the roster decided to move on. Trevor Baskin, most notably, was the RMAC Player of the Year. I guess your take on that, your approach of getting back into college basketball at the D2 level and trying to navigate what's always a difficult proposition with the transfer portal.
Yeah, you know, I think that you're exactly right. And it's like when a three-point line came in. Either you embrace it and say, okay, how can I figure this out? Because the A part of it, that it's changed, is a fact. And so the more you spend talking about that, meeting me, staff, others, that you could go down the wrong path with that. So I think in solutions and priorities. And so with that, if you get good players, and let's say they go to the portal and they want to go to Division One or move, this is it. There's this 60s kind of expression right now of an independence and a freedom for the player, and they're exercising it, and it'll come to form. Won't always be this way. And in the meantime, while you're going through that, you say, okay, what can we do to, number one is adapt. So, for example, maybe you pick off us a really good player out of the portal that's a difference maker. And so I just say, hey, it's the environment right now. Let's go.
Mike Dunlap, new Colorado Mesa men's basketball coach, with us on the Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network. And when you're at Metro State, you won the two national championships, Mike. Your connection with Australian basketball, when you spent, of course, time down there with Adelaide in 94-97, had strong connections to Australian basketball coaches and programs down there. It was a great feeder for your Metro State teams winning those titles. Is that part of the equation for you, now that you're coach at Colorado Mesa, to try to tap into those land down under resources once again?
Absolutely. The national program, Basketball Australia, invited us over last month, and I was in Sydney, Canberra, and also Melbourne. And so the knife is sharp as far as the connections and the network goes, tapping into that. One is that all Division II programs have a hard time getting big players of size. And when the Metro teams moved in, we had an advantage maybe over the Mavs or Fort Lewis or whatever, only in the talent that we were able to get with size. And so, you know, being targeted, I think that is number one. But two is getting players that from Australia, academically, they're really good, and then high character people. And then third is that when somebody comes off continent, they have more at stake because they do not want to call home and say that they lost a game or they're not doing well. So you get a little bit more desperation within the human. And so that's not to say that's all you recruit, but I find that those Australians are like a good spice thrown into a chili. They really add something that's very special.
Mike Dunlap, the new head coach of the Colorado Mesa men's basketball team, joining us today on the Team Sports Network. So what's the approach you take, Mike, with maybe players that have been at Colorado Mesa that played for Mike DeGeorge that have entered the portal but, you know, are still have not committed to go someplace else? Do you reach out to them? Is there a communication with them in regard to potentially staying now that they know who's going to be the head coach?
I think so. I think that anybody in their right mind would say that the excellence of Coach DeGeorge and his staff, and what they did is you want to replicate a given day, a given week, and not have radical change to see if you can be seamless in that. But the portal also has a degree of just keep your poise, you know, because it's bigger than the men's basketball program or any athletic program. The university has a power to it on relationships with professors, and optically it's a superior place. It's got to be one of the top 10 programs and facility-wise in the United States. And so I think you embrace other things because there's the student-athlete, you know, and there's a flavor there, and I think it pulls on the heartstrings of those players, even if they went into the portal. It's very natural that they would be a little crestfallen that their head coach they had a relationship with and the staff is now gone. And that's just normal when you're 18 to 22 in that window. Those are things that extend to adults. I mean, that the relationship and the dynamics have changed. And so I think poise and patience and being really positive about what's been achieved. Coach DeGeorge is a one percenter. He did a great, great job there and established tradition. And so I think that's just a ripple effect. And, yeah, we'll embrace everything that's been done and also what the school is about, because there's a mission statement of give back and you know, the other things that a student goes through in a given day. And so I'll highlight that as well.
When you're developing a relationship, say it's with Maverick players that decide to stay or new players coming in, and the approach you've had at the variety of stops you've been at, and most notably with Metro State, what is the Mike Dunlap plan? How do you approach developing those relationships? What are the keys for you to developing really good relationships with your players?
Vulnerability. I think that everybody goes through a given day, week, month, and things happen, and they're external. And so as a coach, they're called relationship builders when there's really not a quid pro quo. And that means that the athlete needs some help in some other areas. It could be nutrition or sleep deprivation or something's going on with a girlfriend. And, you know, asking good questions, listening and being empathetic, but also is pushing the wagon of accountability, you know, saying, hey, you made that choice. Okay, what's the problem? Okay, and being part of the solution for them and being there when it's not sexy. And those build trust, and also is what you bring to the relationship is be confident, be professional, and then bring speakers to them from the outside that have nothing to do with basketball but are transferable truths in their education as men, and getting them to understand what it is to be a husband, what it means to have manners, what it means to pick up trash when nobody's looking and it's their campus, and taking pride in things that are holistic, that again have nothing to do with an orange ball through a rim. And those are the things that I look for.
Joining us this morning, new Colorado Mesa men's basketball coach Mike Dunlap with us on the Team Sports Network. We'll get now to the whiteboard part of things, Mike. When you talk about the Mike Dunlap philosophy and your approach to coaching, what are some of the tenets, the 10 pole, you know, parts of your philosophy to coaching basketball?
Good question, Jim. Clarity is everything, and priorities. You know, in a given day, it's been proven that people don't multitask. They talk about multitasking, but keep your mind on one thing at a time and know your priorities. Whether it's Elon Musk and saying, hey, he has 20 ideas in his head, but you got to prioritize the three things and follow through and get them done on the day. And so for me, it's defense. I'm a defensive coach because then that allows the players to play with a degree of freedom offensively, and getting them to buy in to the fact that it's 94 feet of heat. You got to be in superior condition, and you got to be a dog. You got to get after the basketball, because every coach in America creates habit patterns within their practice. And defensively, it's our job to speed them up and break their patterns that they've been working on, and make the game messy to a degree, and trust your players to make decisions as they're coming down the floor. And those decisions have to be predictable, and that's where the numbers come in. So the analytics of the NBA, that's where the game has gone. Michael Lewis, Moneyball, all of that is to embrace it, but not harness the player with those numbers so it slows them down. And so it's a nice balance. But if, you know, I'll be very clear with the players, if they're not into defense, they're not into their fitness component, it's going to be a very hard thing for them. So you have to go out and you got to get personality selections, everything. And it would be tantamount to an AP class or an advanced English class. It's not for everybody. And there's a certain type of person that you have to go and get to fit the puzzle. So my priority right away will be on the defensive side of things and their fitness component. They're going to have to be able to run. And like I said, George did a great job with tempo. At there, more and more people came to the game because he opened it up. That wasn't the way it was when he first came in. But the evolution of that, he realized that in the town of Grand Junction, people want to be entertained, you know, an entertaining style. And so that means we have to go out and recruit athletes. We have to bring in people that can go up and down.
Mike Dunlap, new CMU men's basketball coach, joining us on the Jim Davis Show. And – On that offensive side of things, we know the NBA's kind of positionless. You've coached there. You've been an assistant at the D1 level, where this year, March Madness, we saw the big guy still plays. You talk to the D2 level, it's hard to get that type of size. Where do you come down on the offensive theory when it comes to big man in the middle, couple of forwards, couple of guards, or are you more of a positionless type of mindset?
Well, first off, is any smart coach is going to take the talent that they have in front of them and let them play so that you can extrapolate what their strengths are and get them to play to their strengths as much as possible. So whether a guy is tall, small, a left-handed, right-handed, or whatever, it's my job just to pay attention, ask questions, and then watch their habit patterns as they play. And then, as you said, you know, the game's more of a spread game, spacing steer. Athletes are longer and quicker and better coached, whether it's the weight room or they've got a sports psychologist that's working on the mental side of things. The information out there is incredible. But my job offensively, whether it is what they call a delay game, which is a spread game with five out, or you inherit some bigs, is to use those things to their advantage. I would think that most people think that Danny Hurley, with his family, is one of the better coaches in the United States today. And so if we get a big guy, it's to make sure that he's feeling loved and developed. And a lot of coaches don't really know how to deal with the big guy. I was a part of Pete Newell, the premier, historically, big man coach that ever lived. And for 20 years, I was a part of this big man camp because I'm a smaller person. And I wanted to go where they ain't. And that is to, you know, go there and study the bigs, whether it was Jabbar, I was a part of his world, or it was Elijah Wan, or it goes all the way to the current ones. Is that coach is gone now, but that's in my portfolio. So I love big guys, and I think that as you saw in the national championship game and with Edie and all of those guys, is the numerics people try to wash out the big. You know, and there was a couple years where they said, well, you know, it's passé. I don't agree at all, never have, and I think there's a great place for the big, whether he's in a corner at the top or he's posting up. It's a coach's job to, number one, see what the human being can do and then grab your analytics and then move it that way.
Mike Dunlap joining us this morning, new Colorado Mesa men's basketball coach with us on the Team Sports Network. Mike, I think you laid it out really nicely about why you're coming to Grand Junction from a CMU standpoint. But what about the area? You're familiar with the area, obviously, when you coached at Metro State, making trips over here in RMAC play. What about Grand Junction entices you and your family to move here?
Well, this started when I was a boy, and I played for the Alaska Goaltenders, and Grand Junction had great baseball. So when they would come up, I knew the name. And Fairbanks and Grand Junction are very much alike, knowing that Grand Junction is a kinder, gentler place, and it doesn't have, you know, a Western States kind of harsh, you know, temperatures. But when you're going into a small community, that means that you're eating at the local cafe and you're meshing yourself with the community. And that could be fundraisers. That could be community service where you don't have your palm to the sky and you're not asking for something, but you're saying immediately that you're a part of the community. Whether it's the faculty and or something outside that somebody needs help with, because we've got 15 guys. And then so you move in and you help people, and it's not a quid pro quo. But I think that those are things that endear the program and university to the community, saying that it's an older community, it's a retirement community in some regards, but there is a vibrant underpinning that's coming through because of all of the graduates that are happening from Mesa. So I do think that you know, it's kind of a really nice hybrid. But for me, that is very attractive. I've been on the plains, been in the NBA, been in the biggest stadiums in the world, and experienced all of that. But now, like I said, as I get to come back home, you know, and be a part of something that I absolutely love, my experience in Denver and Metro State. But when I got off the bus, out of all the places that I went, Colorado Mesa attracted me to what they had there, whether it's the vistas or whether it was the people, and we would grab our meal and then play the game and then get out. what you had to do. But I noted it, and when Joan became the AD, I was hoping that I got asked, you know, to interview, and that's exactly what happened.
Well, Mike, we appreciate you fitting us in this morning. I know it's been a hectic couple of days, hectic weekend for you. I know a press conference is scheduled at some point down the road, and we appreciate this impromptu press conference to a degree, this interview this morning with us. Looking forward to working with you over at Colorado Mesa, and I've always admired the success you've had and the way you coach basketball. Looking forward to seeing that, obviously, now here at in Grand Junction with CMU. Appreciate the time, Mike. Thank you so much, and welcome back to Colorado. Welcome to Colorado Mesa.
Thanks, Jim, and you're welcome to come into practice, because that's where you'll see things as they unfold. So, you know, you're more than welcome to come on in and have that experience. It'll be fun.
Looking forward to it. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate the time this morning. Take care.
You take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Mike Dunlap, the new Maverick men's basketball coach. It's a good kid. Won two national titles. He's coached in the NBA.
He has a pretty good resume.
And he just gets, since Mike's 66 now, I didn't want to get into all this, but I think he's probably, and he kind of, that's why I said, why Grand Junction? I think he's at the stage of his life, him and his wife, that this is a little bit slower pace. It's not the NBA.
Yeah.
It's not the grind that the NBA is. You never know if you're going to, you know, guy you're playing for, Mike Boldenholzer, gets fired and you lose your job, and because you're part of his staff and there's more consistency. He knows Joan McDermott extremely well. They have a tremendous relationship.
Eventually, we're going to have to ask him, what's it like to get fired by Michael Jordan? Eventually.
I thought we'd leave that question out today.
No, today, absolutely.
I thought we'd leave that out.
Because that's not what this is, but, you know, maybe not necessarily an interview situation, but...
But
like,
somebody's going to ask him at some point.
Yeah, it'll probably be me.
It'll be somebody. It'll probably ask that.
I
don't know if it'll be me, but it might be you.
I got a question for you, Coach. What's it like to be fired by Mike?
Did Mike do it himself?
Yeah.
Did he have somebody come and do it?
Did Mike have his caddy do it via phone call?
We're going to miss Mike to George.
Yes.
But what an incredible hire. Kudos to Joan McDermott and President Marshall and all the folks involved in that. I know Dave Yonke was involved in the search committee as well. And that's just a tremendous hire. Guy that's took the RMAC to prominence.
Yeah.
With those two national championships in the early 2000s. All right, 8:22. Jim along with the Buckeye Boy. And right now with us, we got Charles. Good morning, Charles. How are you?
Hey, good morning. How are you today?
Charles is in to talk about the Palisade Bluegrass Bash, which gets underway this Thursday out in Palisade. Now, this is kind of a byproduct of COVID and everything, and chance for the Palisade Bluegrass Festival to get kind of a little bit of a kickoff and a return, a kind of a soft return, if you will, after COVID. But it's stayed around, and it's been really a nice kind of spring entry into, of course, later this summer with the Palisade Bluegrass Festival.
Yeah, so it was started after COVID to help bring some revenue back to these venues that had been shut down. Four of us partnered together to bring in this festival, and this will be our third annual. This weekend we'll have 19 bands rolling through from Thursday to Sunday.
So like I said, starts on Thursday, wraps up on Sunday, Talbot Cider, the Livery Downtown Palisade, Palisade Brewing Company as well, some of the locations, DeRocco Cellars, I believe, is the other one. So a lot of different venues, and the thing you said, 19 bands, incredible bluegrass bands, performers coming in, and this is all free to go check out all this great music out in Palisade starting on Thursday.
Yes, sir.
So give us an idea of some of the bands coming in. Maybe somebody, if they're a diehard bluegrass fan, maybe they've heard a couple of these bands.
So some of the bands coming in are everything from different local bands to bands that are opening for much larger venues. Some of the headliners for it are Chicken Wire Empire, Floodgate Operators, Clay Street Unit, some pretty big, prominent bands.
We got Charles with us. Palisade Bluegrass Bash gets underway Thursday out in Palisade. So people can go to the website, Palisade Bluegrass Festival website, to get the entire schedule, correct?
Yeah, palisadebluegrass.com has the schedule, the venues, and all other pertinent information.
So when you get these bands, how do you procure these bands? How do you get them to come in and play? I know some of them are probably, you know, Colorado bands, certainly. It's a short trip to Palisade to play, but Charles, take us through the process of how you get some of these incredible bands to come to the Valley and play for the Palisade Bluegrass Bash.
So Jared Frisner with 4th Street Music is a local music company in Palisade. He works with all of these bands as he is a musician. And he catches them on their odd days when they're traveling through. So we're able to get them at a really good price so we can get some killer bands in that makes it affordable for us to be able to host this event.
All right. So I know Thursday night's kind of the I think you mentioned Chicken Wire is going to be one of the bands playing. Thursday night's kind of the light night, the slow intro into the weekend, and Friday, Saturday, Sunday is really a jam-packed full of performances at all those places I referenced.
Yeah, we suggest Thursday night all the locals should come out because it's going to be a lot more low-key and there'll be less travelers coming in and you'll get a lot more personal bluegrass experience.
How many people do you expect coming into the Valley? Do you have an estimate of what you've seen in the past of people, the kind of traffic it generates from out of town?
We're estimating 500 to 1,000 people will attend throughout the weekend.
All right, very good. Got your Talbots hat on. Love some of their cider, by the way. Great stuff out at Talbots, and you can enjoy some of that. Also, maybe a Dirty Hippie out at Palisade Brewing Company as well. It's the Palisade Bluegrass Bash. Go to the Palisade Bluegrass website to get all the information about when acts are playing, the locations that they'll be playing at out in Palisade this weekend. It starts on Thursday. And, of course, later on this summer, Palisade Bluegrass Festival out at Riverbend Park.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and I'm sure the work is already underway for that coming up this summer as well. Charles, appreciate you stopping by today. Thanks for coming in and talking about the Bluegrass Bash.
Hey, thank you so much for your time today.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with more on the Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network.
Touchdown every morning.
The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, The Team.
Welcome back, 829. Jim Malone of the Buckeye Boy. Is that little Tool this morning?
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
So I got to turn my mic on.
I saw a guy when we were in Iowa, went to the Amana Colonies with his Tool sweatshirt on.
Oh, naturally.
Yeah. I thought about striking up a conversation about some Tool, but I thought, maybe he might think I'm a Tool of a different kind. And so I chose not to do that.
Like, hey, bro, cool shirt.
Cool shirt. Love Vicarious. It's a great song.
Great song. Stink Fist.
Love Maynard.
Yeah, Maynard. You pussy for fan, brother.
No, I chose not to do that. That seemed ridiculous and silly, and so I chose not to do that. All right, 8:30, and we still need to do Triple Play Records Stadium Cinema. We'll have that coming up in just a little bit. But because we had Mike Dunlap on, move some things around this hour, so it's time for...
The latest on the Broncos and the league. It's Around the NFL on the Jim Davis Show.
All right. Diehard, longtime Broncos fans, like our friend Howard from Fruita, probably enjoying this news today that Barney Chavis is going to be inducting the Colorado Sports Hall of Fame. Barney Chavis, member of the Orange Crush. And the names you usually think of with that particular unit, you know, Randy Gratishar, Tom Jackson, Reuben Carter, Lyle Alzado, Louis Wright, but certainly Barney Chavis is a big, big part of the success of that defense that helped the Broncos get to their first ever Super Bowl. One of only four Broncos to reach the 75-sack milestone. Von Miller with 110.5, Simon Fletcher with 97.5, Carl Mecklenburg with 79. And so for Barney Chavis, one of those unsung players on the defensive line, Barney finished with 75 sacks in his career, and when Simon Fletcher was inducted in the Broncos Ring of Fame in 2016, he mentioned how Barney Chavis kind of blazed the trail for him to be one of the Broncos' all-time great pass rushers. And so cool to see Barney Chavis, who will get his chance to go into the Colorado Sports Hall of Fame. But I'm trying to see the date on when it's going to take place. I believe it happens this summer for Barney Chavis, but congratulations. Very underrated defensive lineman for the Broncos in that Orange Crush defense back in the 70s. Also, I was watching last night. They had the Kuiper Field Yates mock draft last night on ESPN.
Oh, okay.
Who do you think they picked? Who was selected 12th by the Broncos?
J.J. McCarthy.
Nope. They had the Vikings
Joseph
moving up.
James McCarthy.
They had the Vikings. I thought it was Jar Jar McCarthy.
Jar Jar McCarthy.
They had the Vikings moving up to get him. Brock Bowers, Georgia tight end.
That's a good get.
A lot of smoke right now around Spencer Rattler.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen some of that.
A lot of talk about Rattler Michael Pratt, the Tulane quarterback, but a lot of talk about Rattler maybe in the second round for the Broncos, or when their next pick, I should say, in the draft coming up next week, by the way. I mean, next weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Draft fast approaching. So, I don't know. Bowers, you've got to have weapons. And Brock Bowers is a guy that is, he's Travis Kelce-like. He's a guy that can put in the slot. He's a guy who can line up to the numbers. He is a guy that can create a lot of mismatches. And he's also a guy that can play hurt, too. As we saw Georgia, how he played through, I believe, the ankle injury. Guy's willing to play hurt. Not that that's always the best thing in the world, but a guy that is pretty durable. To me, that speaks more to his durability.
Mm-hmm. And that's something you don't really have at tight end, and you haven't for a while.
And a playmaker, a guy that can make plays. They desperately need that.
I mean, you had 40 receptions from your tight ends this year?
That number sounds right.
Out of 300 and some? You know, that's not a great number to have for the tight end group.
Now the question becomes for the Broncos.
Not one of them started every single game.
Now, the question becomes for the Broncos. First off, is there a quarterback that they are willing to sacrifice to go get? And next week, we're going to have, we'll get Cody back on with us, Cody Rourke from Mile High Sports, our Broncos insider. Is there anybody there? I mean, are they willing to sacrifice to get a McCarthy? Sacrifice the future in terms of draft picks? Because when you look at the Broncos draft pick situation right now, sure, it's not great. Will Rattler be there in the third round unless they trade back and get a second round pick? Because their first pick isn't until round three.
Right. And you know, like, if you're going to trade up to get J.J. McCarthy, you know, are you going to be able to withstand the early going? Because if you didn't add any help through free agency, which you didn't, and if you sacrifice draft capital this year, next year, to get J.J. McCarthy, you're not going to be able to add significant help the next 2 years, maybe, depending on where you go. J.J. McCarthy can't do it on his own. He needs the most help out of any of these six quarterbacks. And two of them you're not going to be able to go get because the Bears aren't moving. And I don't think Washington's going to move because you don't have enough to budge them. So you got to look at the next four, right? That's Nix, May, Penix Jr., and McCarthy. Are any of those guys going to be able to do it on their own for a year or two if you go up and get them?
And there's now some talk, and they mentioned this last night, they don't think Nix will go until late in the first round, maybe early second round.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're Denver, do you make a move to try to get more picks, try to get a second round pick, to get a Rattler,
to get
a
Nix?
Yeah. Do you do that?
Go back three or four picks at a time, and if there's somebody there that you feel you can get three picks later, bounce back again. Just continually move down the draft board. See if you can't pick up two or three extra draft picks.
Because Denver's a team that has a lot of needs. Quarterback, offensive line, defensive line. Impact
defensive
players.
Coordinator. Can't draft one of those, but.
An impact wide receiver.
Yeah.
Where that's where Brock Bowers at least would kind of fit that, mm-hmm. that area of you, whoever you end up with as your quarterback. Stidham, whoever.
Right. The thing with Brock Bowers, though.
You got to have playmakers around
right.
him.
Right. You need an impact wide receiver and an impact tight end. Yeah. And he's only one guy.
And
you're still going to need another weapon.
I mean, Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be gone.
Yep.
Malik Nabers is probably going to be gone.
Mm-hmm.
Nabers is an intriguing player. Not that Marvin Harrison Jr. is not.
Right. Thomas, the other one from LSU. Probably a soft.
A Dunsey would be great. Brian Thomas Jr.
Mm-hmm. Roma Dunsey might be there, might not be there. But
probably not.
You know, like there's way, if you're at seven, this is nothing because there's only so many teams in front of you.
Yeah, does a guy like a Roman Wilson who would probably be higher in this group if this wasn't such a
loaded,
loaded talent laden group. He's a guy that'd probably be hired. Will he be there if Denver finds a way to get a second round pick? Could they go that direction? Would he drop to the second round? I mean, that's Denver's problem is this. They have so many needs.
Mm-hmm.
But it all starts at quarterback, though.
Ideally, what I think they should do is if you can get someone in that 17 to 21 range that really wants to come up 5 or 10 spots, they'll give you their first rounder and a second rounder. See if you can't swap first round picks, drop back to 19, and get a second rounder. That way, you may be able to snag a Wilson at that, a Wilson you'll like for at least 10 minutes at that juncture in the second round, and then maybe somebody falls to you in the first round, or vice versa. Maybe you can get Rattler in the second round if you're so intrigued by him because he feels the Broncos was the toughest interview and you just love it. Or, and then get a weapon of some sort mid to late first round.
It's just so hard with this year because of Justin Simmons gone.
Mm-hmm.
Of the moves that you've made, of dealing Wilson. A quarterback, well, I get it, not everybody loved him.
Yeah.
But provided consistency at the position for you this past season.
Mm-hmm.
And you still have an offensive line that you're not sure about with McGlinchey and Powers underperforming. With Garrett Bowles heading into a final year of his deal, and he's 32. Defensive line needs help. The list goes on and on here, and that's the challenge for Sean Payton and George Payton is, yeah, need a quarterback, but you also need a lot of other things too. And I just, you know, on the offense, it's a deep year for offensive linemen. It's a deep year for wide receivers. And you need talent. You've got to have talent for whoever you get a quarterback. Is it a case where you hope a Pratt or somebody like that's available second or third round, you can develop, and then you see where things go with Stidham, which is that's where I'm kind of feeling this going a little bit. I don't know if Denver's going to shoot for the moon and try to trade up. I think that's a little Sean Payton, you know, kind of playing poker with everybody. You know, we might move up.
Mm-hmm. I think he's letting people know 12 is available if they want it, and he's willing to go in either direction. But there's also a segment of I call it a little bit Chip Diller, right? All is well. Like, they're rebuilding. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You can't release all of those players, not fill those holes at all in free agency. I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah.
And then you're stuck at 12. And your solution is either trade up for J.J. McCarthy or try to snag a second-round pick for Spencer Rattler. Like, this is not quite Vegas-level implosion, but kind of what, like, the mirage. It's still going to be standing there, but it's going to look completely different in 2 or 3 years.
And say Penix or Nix is there at 12. Say they don't trade up. And they pass on them.
Oh, then
how shocking is that going to be?
Might as well hang a curtain over the building at that point.
That Sean Payton doesn't feel like either guy is who he wants. And I get feeling Sean Payton doesn't care what the fan base says, does not give a hoot. And to a degree, he's right about that. He shouldn't. Mm-hmm. He needs to make the best decision for what he thinks is the right direction for this football team. But man, is he going to get just obliterated on social media if either one of those guys is there at 12 and they don't pull the trigger.
Yeah.
There's some talk that Penix Jr. might go to the Raiders, but there's also talk now the Raiders are just going to go with Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew. Could Denver do the same thing with Stidham? If they just go, we haven't seen the best of Jarrett Stidham yet. Or he's going to get a full season of being the starter here.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that happening too. I don't have a real good sense, Buckeye, of what direction they're going to go here.
I have no idea what they're going to do. Because, and like, I don't know if the mock draft people have a better sense just because they read the tea leaves better, but there are mock drafts, and you can probably find them, that have the Broncos trading up as high as 4 or 5 and going back down into the 20s and anywhere in between. It's like, what exactly are they going to do? I don't think anybody knows. I'm not even sure they know at this point what they're going to do. I think it's very much a, how does the first 90 minutes of the draft develop?
Now, we mentioned Dave Logan. Logan thinks there's a chance he'll trade up.
I mean, yeah, there's a chance.
But there's a chance of...
That's like saying there's a chance the draft will happen.
There's also a chance he'll trade down, too. Yeah. Dave's closer to that situation than obviously the average
person. Dave,
what
do you think they'll do? There's a chance they trade up. There's a chance they trade back. It's about 33%. And then there's a 33% chance they'll stay where they're at. And a 1% chance they'll Vikings it and just let the time run out without doing anything.
I just have the concern that they won't pull the trigger on getting a quarterback if somebody's there. Doesn't mean they have to go crazy and trade up, but they're not going to get a quarterback. They're going to let a Penix Jr. go by, or because Sean Payton thinks, I can develop Jared Stidham, and we'll see what's out there next year.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Dak Prescott will want to come to Denver. Or I'll find a veteran guy if Stidham doesn't work out. And we'll just ride out this year, and this will be part of the growing pains of turning this program or this organization into the kind of organization I want.
Mm-hmm.
The Broncos country, you're going to get some new unis, and you better suck it up, because we're going to suck in 2024.
This feels a little bit like the interview scene from The Joker, where Sean Payton is going to go into the draft. He's going to do whatever he's going to do, and he's going to do it with conviction, and he's going to believe in it. And if it's something that people just raise their eyebrows at, he's going to be like, well, you wouldn't get it. That's kind of how I feel this is going to. I don't know what he's going to do, but I know that if I disagree, he's going to make me feel dumb. It's like, you just wouldn't understand. I'd love to have this
naive trust in him that he's won a Super Bowl. He's been a very successful coach. He knows what he's doing.
The Broncos, you want to talk about Sean Payton's
Super
Bowl.
But I don't have that trust. I don't have that.
You want to talk about Sean Payton's Super Bowl. He's won a Super Bowl, the blind trust. Like, there are fans that say it's been generations since the Broncos have won.
Stop it.
It's been more recently than Sean Payton.
Yeah.
Like, it's been forever. We deserve a winner, but I have blind trust in Sean Payton. He's won a Super Bowl. His was 8 years before yours. It's been a long time. You would talk about generations.
Yeah, exactly.
Or kids driving that were born that year.
So let's pump the brakes on just this blind trust faith. He knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to hope so.
People love Nathaniel Hackett 2 years ago at this time.
I was among them. Like, hey, play music at practice.
He plays music. He's such a great guy.
Fun guy.
Talks a mile a minute. Look at the energy. He's fantastic. He's young. Look at
that. It's great.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, 5 wins and gone before the season ends.
Yeah.
All right. It's time to play Triple Play Record Stadium Cinema.
Know your sports TV shows and movies? Let's play Stadium Cinema on the team.
Yes, up for grabs today. It's the Downtown Double Play with Triple Play, a $20 gift certificate to our friends at Triple Play Records, and a small antipasto salad courtesy of Junction Square Pizza. First correct answer on the text line gets it. If you want any time in the last 2 weeks, including earlier this morning, that is in the last 2 weeks, you are not eligible for the prize. If you don't want it, don't play. Other than that, have at it. And I feel this one's pretty easy because we've talked about it a couple times in the last few weeks. First, to identify this sports documentary on the text line, gets it with the Downtown Double Play with Triple Play.
Once we launched this offer sheet, they were going to have 7 days.
There you go. That's it.
Okay.
If you missed it, if there's sirens or something, I'll get you again.
Once we launched this offer sheet, they were going to have 7 days.
There you go.
Okay. So send your answer in right now, text line only. For the Downtown Double Play with Triple Player Records and Junction Square Pizza. Swing by today. Check out their great selection of vinyl. Don't forget, Record Store Day is this Saturday. Starts at 10 o'clock. Rock's got, and Matt's got a ton of stuff going on this Saturday down there. Some local artists that'll be signing autographs and all kinds of incredible record day, record store day deals down there this Saturday. Triple A Records, 530 Main Street. So get your answer in right now. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Pole dancing on the other side. This is the Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network.
Who do I listen to?
The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader.
Whoever suggested that has got to be smoking crack and plenty of it.
Whoa.
The team.
We got it together, didn't we?
All right, coming to the stage, yeah. It's Amber. We've remember, everybody, $14 Comic-Con.
Let me ask you a question. Do I make you horny, baby? Do I?
I mean, really, when you really sit and think about it, isn't it really, really nice?
Get those dollar bills out. It's time for pole dancing.
I can easily feel myself.
All right, it's our top five Major League Baseball and our top five fictional baseball players, our favorites. All right, so get things started with our top five in Major League Baseball. You got a little music to go along with this, or?
Yeah, I can find some here momentarily.
Okay. Don't take too long.
No, I won't.
Okay, very good.
We just might have to, withstand an ad on the old Google. Of course, it's not enough for us to pay for those services. We have to watch the ads, too.
So, you ready? Okay.
Yep.
All right, so my number five team that beat the Rockies last night, Philadelphia Phillies. Phillies right now with Spencer Turnbull, a guy they kind of picked up off the scrap heap, was at the Tigers,
yeah.
And I think he was at the Mets at one point, had to have Tommy John surgery. Spencer Turnbull's been really, really good so far for Philadelphia. He's been a very pleasant surprise in regard to their bullpen, right, or their rotation right now. Recovering from Tommy John surgery, missed all of 2022. Picked up by the Phillies as camp opened. Just allowed five hits and no runs in his first two starts. So I got Philadelphia, which obviously has Harper and pretty loaded lineup.
Yeah.
My number four team, I have the Baltimore Orioles, where Jackson Holliday's been obviously the hubbub there with the Orioles. But Colton Cowser is hitting .441 right now for them for his first 14 games.
Yeah, he's played pretty well.
Okay, so my number three team, got the Atlanta Braves is my number three team. The injury to Spencer Strider kind of hurts a little bit, but they're still really good. They're still loaded with Ronald Acuna Jr. and company.
And they're not really playing all that well offensively either.
No. My number two team is the Dodgers. Mookie Betts is on a pace for 15 wins above replacement. Otani's been sensational. He doesn't have to talk about his interpreter stealing money from him. And my number one team, this will make Robert so happy, the New York Yankees right now at 12-5. They've been red hot.
They're cheating. I just know it, but I can't prove it.
Volpe's been really good for them. Mm-hmm. Aaron Judge. Soto, that's my number one team.
My number five team, I have the Kansas City Royals.
They were in consideration.
Yeah, they are 11 wins right now. They're first, they're best, and by that I mean fewest, in runs allowed per game. They have the second lowest ERA. They also have some pretty decent numbers going on. Salvador Perez, a little late career resurgence, hitting .339. As the backstop, two-hit whip, that's Whit Merrifield. But Bobby Witt Jr. is two-hit Witt as well, hitting .314. His OPS plus is .190. He is almost twice as good as the major league average. MJ Melendez is playing really well as a young guy. Mikel Garcia, Adam Frazier, the old hand, is going to start coming around at second base, I feel, at some point. So they have the Royals as the number five team. Number four is Atlanta for all the same things you just said. Plus, like I mentioned, they're not hitting great offensively just yet. As you have Ronald Acuna Jr. has as many home runs as I do this season. Next, I have my Cleveland Guardians. They found some offense. Fifth in runs per game, seventh in batting average. They're fourth in ERA, too, without Shane Bieber. And they're second in runs allowed per game. And they beat the Red Sox for the first of three times yesterday And then number two and number one, I have the Doyers and the Yankees.
All right, so move on to our top five favorite fictional baseball players. Billy Dee Williams is Bingo Long, the Bingo Long Traveling All-Stars.
Oh, yeah. Sneaky good.
With Richard Pryor in that movie as well. Mm-hmm. Pedro Serrano from Major League.
Yep, like a no-hit curveball.
Like a no-hit curveball. Joe Boo.
Straight ball, I hate very much.
Also from that same movie, the incredible Rick Vaughn.
Yep.
Roy Hobbs is my number two. And my number one guy, not just because we share the same last one.
Yeah.
There we go. I forgot that part of it. Glad I hit the dump button on that.
This is the Jim Davis show. My number five.
I started his favorite speech. I thought I'd skip past that part. I did not.
No.
But fortunately, nobody got to hear that.
But we got to hear what he likes. My number five, I identify more and more I get older with Roger Dorn. I don't feel I should have to do any calisthenics. I don't feel they're necessary. Roy Hobbs, number four. Pedro Serrano, curveball, bats are afraid. Ricky Vaughn, number two, and Crash Davis, number one.
Sorry
I'm
about
not
that.
Not going to play any sound.
No, I thought I'd skip past that, but I didn't, apparently. I thought I did. All right. Fortunately, nobody got to hear that. All right. Hour three coming up next.